case this morning, Josh versus County of Cook. Ms. Carr-Sucker.
Good morning, Your Honors. Heidi Carr-Sleeper on behalf of the appellant, Dr. Ahmad Jaji. May it please the Court. There are two reasons why this Court should reverse the summary judgment entered by the District Court and remand this case for trial. First, the District Court erred in ruling that there was no evidence that harassment occurred because Dr. Jaji was Muslim or Syrian, where there is evidence that Dr. Jaji experienced firsthand comments about his national origin and religion. Second, the District Court also erred in considering only timing on his retaliation claim, where there's evidence that his supervisor, Dr. Ladd, the head of the Hematology and Oncology Department, wanted to get rid of him prior to the budget issues, but had to wait for the opportunity. Turning to the first point, the District Court ignored Dr. Jaji's firsthand observations of Dr. Khachaturian's words and actions. Dr. Jaji witnessed Dr. Khachaturian stating that the president needed to eliminate the countries of the Middle East and those fanatics from the face of the planet, that they were all terrorists. She said this while glaring angrily at him as he testified in his deposition.
Where was that deposition testimony called to the District Court's attention?
The deposition testimony is in the record at page 775.
That's not my question. The question is, in the summary judgment submissions, where did Dr. Jaji and his counsel call the District Court's attention to that testimony?
I don't recall where they pointed it out to the District Court in the summary judgment.
Isn't that a problem?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that a problem?
No, that evidence was part of the record. I can't recall specifically.
We've said I don't know how many times that a party relying on evidence in summary judgment has to call it to the attention of the District Court. There are various metaphors that are used, but we don't require courts to take undertake an unguided search of the record. So that's a problem, frankly.
I don't recall specifically in the summary judgment pleadings where his trial counsel pointed that out, but I know that was prominent in the case. That was part of the main evidence that he had, was that this comment was heard.
That's not my question. That's not the way Local Rule 56.1 works.
I'm certain that it was part of his statement of facts, but I don't have that cite to tell you.
I've got it in front of me, and I don't see it.
Okay.
That's my concern.
I know it was part of his deposition, part of his declaration, that the statement of facts were based on and was part of the main evidence, but I don't recall specifically where his trial counsel relied on it. In addition to that statement, there was also a statement that Dr. Khachaturian told Dr. Jaji that Middle Eastern men were chauvinists. These comments that Dr. Jaji was a firsthand witness to, he does not need to provide corroboration of his firsthand testimony of his versions of words and actions in order to create an issue of material fact, like this court found in Payne versus Polly and reiterated recently in Berry versus Chicago Transit Authority. In addition to those statements, there were also statements that were made regarding Christianity and religion in the department as well. Based on this evidence, a fact finder could reasonably conclude that the harassment occurred because of his national origin and religion, based on Dr. Khachaturian's comments relating to his religion and national origin. In addition, the court erred in finding that there was no evidence that the harassment was severe or pervasive. As this court held in Saros v. Steel Technologies, Inc., and unambiguous, and also in Rogers v. Western Southern Life Insurance Company, an unambiguously racial epitaph falls on the more severe end of the spectrum, and there's no magic number that makes a harassment severe. In this case, Dr. Khachaturian's suggestion that Dr. Jage was a terrorist because he's from the Middle East is sufficiently severe to create a hostile work environment. This case is similar to the EEOC versus Sunbelt Rentals, which is a Fourth Circuit case where they reversed the grant of summary judgment to the employer of a Muslim whose coworkers called him a Taliban and made fun of his headwear and his beard. In addition to these statements, the harassment also impaired Dr. Jage's ability to do his job. Prior to the harassment that he complained of, he used to get awards from his peers, and his supervisors commented that he got along well with his peers. After that, and part of the harassment was in the clinic, that Dr. Khachaturian had control over his day-to-day duties.
The major problem in this case, as I see it, counsel, if I could skip to the last area of inquiry, which is whether there's any basis for employer liability here, because the complaints that he made about Dr. Khachaturian were not based on religious or national origin discrimination, but because she was overbearing and grandiose and otherwise treated him unfairly, apparently played favorites, etc. But it wasn't a religious discrimination or national origin discrimination based complaint. In the absence of that, we don't have a basis of employer liability here, even assuming that you can overcome the other hurdles.
His complaint started out at the beginning in 2004. He complained, as you stated, that Dr. Khachaturian was creating a difficult work environment. And then his complaints began to escalate, that he was being discriminated against, and that if his complaints weren't remedied, that he was going to go to the EEOC. In addition, he also complained up the chain of command, complained to the president of the medical staff, Dr. Benson, that what he was suffering was discrimination and harassments. In addition, in September of 2006, he also complained that he believed that the discipline he received was a clear discrimination based on my race and origin. He complained to Dr. Khachaturian that her comments regarding Middle Easterners were inflammatory and unacceptable. And then he filed, before he was terminated in October of 2006, he filed a complaint with the EEOC alleging that it was national origin and religion, and still nothing was done to remedy his complaints at that point in time.
Is there any evidence that after the October 2006 EEOC charge, Dr. Khachaturian's conduct continued? And if so, could you direct us to that evidence?
I don't believe there's any evidence in the record that there was that there were further comments that were made. There's no indication that things got any different in his working conditions.
In other words, the record is silent.
I don't believe there's anything relating to Dr. Khachaturian after that EEOC complaint in the record.
The concern is the first explicit point about either religious or national origin discrimination comes in that letter to the decision maker in the disciplinary proceeding in September of 06, right?
That's where the first states race and origin, yes.
Right. And then a month later, there's the EEOC charge. And if there's no evidence of a continuing hostile environment after that, it's a little hard to see how we impose hostile environment liability on the employer.
I don't believe there's any further comments that are in the record, but part of the hostile work environment was how she was treating him in the clinic, not giving him interns and associates to work with. And there's no evidence that that abated. There's no evidence that that Cook County met with him or with her to remedy his complaints other than to blame him and say, why can't you get along with Dr. Khachaturian? So there's no evidence that they actually took steps to remedy the complaints. And the further evidence that it continued is that he was ultimately terminated. In addition, back to his discriminatory complaints, in Kastner versus City of Loves Park, this court held that the plaintiff's question of aren't you being discriminatory was enough to be protected activity. And in Loudermilk versus Best Palette, this court held recently that Title VII does not have a vagueness exception. So I believe that his comments that he was complaining of discrimination and harassment and threatening to go to the EEOC are protected activity and put the employer on notice and gave them a duty to investigate and remedy his complaints and at least question him as to what discrimination he felt he was feeling. This was not an isolated complaint where he said, you know, one time I think it's discrimination. He complained over and over and over up the food chain to as many people as he could to try to get some relief and ultimately failed to receive any. In addition to the hostile work environment claim, the district court also erred in considering only timing on his retaliation claim, where there's evidence that Dr. Ladd, who was the head of the oncology and hematology department, was looking for an opportunity to solve what he called the problem. As early as July 2006, he wrote a letter to Dr. Riley, who was the decision maker as to Dr. Jage's termination, saying that he had withheld his credentialing, left it on his desk so that Dr. Jage couldn't be credentialed, and that this was an opportunity to solve a problem. In addition, so I think that, like this court held in Bellevere versus Quantix Corp, you have to look, this district court erred in not looking at this as a continuous effort to try to get rid of Dr. Jage. Dr. Ladd wasn't able to do so himself, as he testified in his deposition, and so the budget issues provided that opportunity to get rid of Dr. Jage, including you can look at the fact that the budget issues were an opportunity based on the evidence of pretext that there was, that Dr. Jage, Dr. Ladd testified that after laying off Dr. Jage, they took several years to try to get a physician to replace the loss of Dr. Jage, where if it was a budget issue that that physician was eliminated, then there wouldn't have been a replacement needed. In addition, the part-timer was raised to a full-timer, and Dr. Jage was not rehired as the preferential rules state that he could be, based on Dr. Ladd's determination that he was not a team player and had difficulties with interpersonal relationships. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, so I'll hang on to the rest of that.
Thank you, Counsel. Creighton?
Good morning. Andrew Creighton for Cook County. Just going back to the question you had, Judge Hamilton, there's absolutely nothing in the record after the EEOC filing in October and the layoff in April of 2007 that deals with any complaints about anything in Dr. Jage or Dr. Kakaninden or Dr. Khachaturian. The record's silent, absolutely silent in that regards. I wanted to go back to one point I think is very important. The representation in the appellant's brief that Dr. Jage was called a terrorist. There is nothing in this record anywhere where Dr. Jage was called a terrorist. It's a misrepresentation of the record. There's two incidents where the word terrorist comes up in this record. One is after the attack of where Marines were killed, and Dr. Khachaturian said in the presence and looking at Dr. Jage that George Bush ought to eliminate those countries in the Middle East, they're all terrorists, or something to that effect. That's the only time that came up. It wasn't an accusation calling Dr. Jage a terrorist. The, The other incident that came up in the record is after 9-11, this is from Dr. Jajay's deposition, after the 9-11 attacks, there were rumors circulating in the hospital that some of the Middle Eastern physicians were being called terrorists. And the hospital then had a meeting, brought in all the doctors, had everybody sit down and work through those issues so everybody understood that all the people employed and all the physicians employed from wherever they're at in the Cook County Hospital were all working as a team. They're all in the United States as Americans working together. That's the only two incidents where the word terrorist comes up in this record. When I asked Dr. Jajay in his deposition, where are the slurs? Who told you the ethnic slurs? What was said to you? What he told me in that deposition was, Dr. Khachaturian says that Middle Eastern men are all chauvinists. That was his response to that along those lines. And that's basically what we have here. It just seems to me very important that record be straight on that point. The second issue where I think there's been a misrepresentation in the appellant's brief is this issue of Dr. Jajay becoming physically ill. This is in the record at 837 to 847, and that's the issue of an incident that occurred in December of 2005 when Dr. Jajay was in clinic and there was a dispute with a patient, and the patient was waiting a long time, and he got angry and yelled at Dr. Jajay. Dr. Jajay got upset. He was sick. He said he's dizzy. He wrote a note to Dr. Ladd, his supervisor, in that regards, and he said he felt dizzy and sick, and he started complaining about safety in the clinic, apparently referring to this dispute he was having with the patient. He went on in that to again say that Dr. Khachaturian was harassing him at that time, but as pointed out in the questions, there's never any mention of anything regarding race or religion or national origin in regards to Dr. Jajay's complaints. Those first come up later after the disciplinary hearing takes place.
Where an employer is receiving repeated complaints of discrimination and harassment, is there a reasonable duty to inquire at some point about that?
I think there is, and in this case, the record is that Dr. Ladd, the supervisor of the oncology department, actually pulled them all in together a number of times and talked down. He had Khachaturian and Jajay there and tried to resolve the differences between them. But the evidence is that those differences were personality conflicts, or conflicts about how the unit was being run, and they were not religious, based on religion or national origin. And the record is that Ladd met with them a number of times on that, and Jajay admitted that in his deposition also. I'd like to address the retaliation issue, if I may, for a moment. Dr. Ladd was not involved in the decision on who got laid off by Cook County during the April 07 layoff procedures. In fact, the record is undisputed that Dr. Ladd objected to anybody being laid off from his department. He needed all three of those positions working there. He was overruled. The system that was set up by Dr. Simon was to be as fair as possible. There were standardized test questions with a score key for each of the different departments that were going to be evaluating for the elimination of positions. If the whole department was going to be eliminated, then they weren't evaluated. The whole department was just gone. But in regards to where there was going to be a partial elimination, that, in fact, was done as a standardized test. The requirements with the key were from Dr. Simon himself, and the requirements were for to be as fair as possible with the panel of individuals doing the evaluations not being from the same department, so the personality conflicts were left off, and to have as much diversity as they could. Now, in this case, the three individuals who evaluated Dr. Jajay, Dr. Telfer, and Dr. Khachaturian were Dr. Riley, who is a white American male, she was one of the people evaluated, and Dr. Martinez, who is a Mexican American, and Dr. Das, who is an Indian who was raised in the Hindu religion. So there's no indication in this record that any three of those individuals had any axe to grind with anybody about the evaluations. And when we look at those evaluations, it is abundantly clear, that Dr. Jajay was not as qualified as the other two individuals. Khachaturian was doing bone marrow transplants, which Dr. Chajay was not doing. And Dr. Telfer was a renowned blood specialist, hematologist, who was running the hematology clinic there. And Martinez, when he was asked, he was in his deposition, he's one of the evaluators, why Dr. Chajay didn't score as high on those as the other two. That's exactly how he explained it. They were better qualified people. In regards to the issue of this negative performance review that Dr. Chajay had and points were deducted, is being presented as some sort of a subterfuge to get rid of him. If you even give him the points back that he lost on the issue of the his performance or his problems with the discipline, he's still the lowest on the score because the other two are better qualified physicians.
Mr. Creighton, let me ask you about detail on the litigation. The district judge seems to have disregarded Dr. Chajay's declaration because it did not comply with Section 1746 on being sworn under penalty of perjury.
Right.
Was that issue, is that something that you brought to the attention of the district court, or was that something the judge found on his own?
That was first presented in a response by the plaintiff, Dr. Chajay, to the motion for summary judgment. And
the declaration was?
The declaration
right.
was. And I had just raised it that it was too late. I don't know that I referred exactly to those cases. What I did was I raised it was too late to do it because it was in response to a motion for summary judgment and never came out in the record before then.
Why is it too late to file an affidavit in response to a motion for summary judgment?
Well, he had given a deposition in the case, and that issue never came up during the deposition. Not once did he say that anyone during the deposition that anyone had told him.
Okay, that's a very different sort of problem as to whether you really exhausted his memory in the deposition or which is unusual. but you all didn't raise the issue.
No, the judge did.
Okay.
I would just make one comment too in response to the appellant's argument in regards to the funding. It's undisputed in the record that the position that Dr. Chajay occupied was removed from the budget for 2 years and it was refunded back in July of 2009. But it's absolutely clear and we have an affidavit from the Business Bureau in that regards that that position no longer was funded during that period.
Where did the money come from to put Dr. Telfer on full-time?
I can't tell you exactly where they took that out of the budget. I don't know. If there are no further questions, I would ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Creighton. Ms. Carsleeper, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Just to address the question again about the district court and the evidence of the ethnic slurs, the district court did note on page 6 of its opinion that Dr. Chajay testified that in the beginning of the summer of 2003, Dr. Khachaturian started harassing him by subjecting him to derogatory remarks, ethnic slurs, and inflammatory statements. So it did note that evidence was out there, although vaguely, in the opinion. In addition, I want to address the couple of points brought up by counsel regarding Dr. Riley making the decision regarding the layoff terminations. In this instance, Dr. Riley actually did the interviews and also made the decision that somebody should be eliminated from that department and that it was Dr. Chajay who should be eliminated. Dr. Riley was well aware of Dr. Jage's complaints, and Dr. Ladd had written to him in July of 2006 complaining about Dr. Jage's disjointed paranoid ramblings, as Dr. Ladd called them, and that he was looking for, he wrote to him about this credentialing issue and that he was looking for an opportunity to get rid of Dr. Jage and had somebody waiting in the wings that he wanted, that he had talked to Dr. Teffler and Dr. Kachatorian about hiring instead. So Dr. Riley was being influenced by Dr. Ladd as to who should be let go in this department prior to these interviews even coming up. In addition to the issue of who's being well qualified, I guess I'm done with my time. If you have any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.